Okay. So we are holding on the top of Lamed Hay, Lamed Beis, second line from the top. In the middle of discussing, the Mishnah had said that Goyish Achiz is author. Well, we said in the Mishnah actually that cheese of Beis Unyaki, we said, which was a place where the chefs did most of their calves for Avodah Zarah, and then they use the stomach contents of that to curdle cheese. There's a curdle milk to make cheese. So those Reb Meir said are also Bahanah, the ones from Beis Unyaki, all other Goyish cheeses, everybody agrees, is only also Bachila. And we had a discussion in the Mishnah between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Shmuel why that should be so. So in the Mishnah we had Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yeshua offered one answer because they use the stomach contents of a nevela to curdle the cheese, but Rabbi Shmuel objected that would make it also to eat, even the stomach contents of an ola on mutter, how much more so a nevela. So then Rabbi Yeshua said, okay, because they... That's not the point. The point is an ola is, there's an isur lav to eat an ola, and you have an isur me'ila. Nevela is also an isur lav, but there's no me'ila. So if you're allowed to, in the case of ola, a kohen is allowed to eat the keva, the curdled milk that's found in the stomach of an ola, how much more so that we should be able to, if they use that for making cheese, it shouldn't make the cheese also. So then Rabbi Yeshua said because they use the curdled milk from the stomach of an animal chef that's brava dezara. And Rabbi Shmuel said in that case, then it should be also bahana as well. So now in the Gemara,
he still doesn't accept
that reason. So we discussed in the Gemara a couple of possible other reasons. And we said that ultimately Rabbi Yeshua didn't want to sell Rabbi Shmuel at the time because it was a new Gzeira, and they wanted that the reason should be known to begin with in order that people will accept it, that people will start following it, and only then later on they can reveal the real reason. So what the real reason is, the Gemara had a few answers so far. One is because, again, a snake may have bitten into it and left venom in there. Gilly, right? Then we said that there might be bits of milk left, which according to Rashi is a different reason, meaning that even though only the milk of kosher animals is fully able to curdle into cheese, the milk of terefa animals is not. Nevertheless, you might have that the goy mixed in some terefa milk into his kosher milk. Now, when he made cheese out of it, you still have little bits of the terefa milk mixed in with the kosher cheese, and therefore no good. Tosfos learns rather that the answer that's not what that answer meant. It meant that even though ordinarily snake venom, if it's there in the cheese, won't allow it to age properly, nevertheless you might have bits of it left in the crevices of the cheese. So that was another answer. Then we had another reason is because they use not just the contents, not just the stomach contents of a nevela, but the actual skin, the actual membrane from the stomach of a nevela, and that would make it also. So what we said is that because then you have the davar mamet, then you have the thing that is making it curdle is something that intrinsically is also the membrane of the skin, it's part of the actual animal, as opposed to the curdled milk that you found in the stomach there is not itself part of the animal, it's only perish. Okay. So now we're going to continue with more reasons. Rav Malkiya Mishmedet of Adaba Avama, Rav Nishma Machlikin Panea B'Shuman Chazir. Rav Malkiya says in the name of Rav Adaba Ava, the reason why Goyish cheese is oster is because they smooth the surface of it using Chazir's cat. Rav Chista Omer Pneshma Amid Noisa B'Choymet. Rav Chista says another reason is because they curdle it. Sometimes they don't always use actual rennet from an animal stomach contents or whatever. Sometimes they can use vinegar, for example, to curdle the cheese and make it, and to curdle the milk and make it into cheese. Well, if the vinegar comes from wine of goyim, then it's also.
No, but
is
the vinegar you have to curdle the cheese?
Apparently it is, I don't know. Rav Nachman by Yitzchak Amram, Peshma Amid Noisa B'Sracha Orla. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says another reason is because they use the sap of the sap that flows from trees of Orla to curdle the milk. Well, the question is, Kaman ki hai Tana? Well, then who does that explanation of Rav Nachman Yitzchak go like? It would seem to be only according to the following Tana. The Tanya is actually a Mishnah in Orla. That Rabbi Eliezer Omer Hamam B'Sracha Orla. So Rabbi Eliezer says that if a person makes cheese using the sap from a tree of Orla, then the cheese is osur, Mipneshu Pevi, because that sap is considered a fruit from the tree, and therefore since the actual fruit of the tree would be Orla, then so is the sap that comes out of the tree. that oozes out of the tree.
If it's taken by a goy, why shouldn't it be mutter?
No, because it doesn't matter. Orla is also whether it's in the possession of a Jew or a goy.
In Eretz Yisrael.
But there is a difference, actually. There is a difference that Sophic Orla is also in Eretz Yisrael and Mutter in Chutz La'aretz. So in that case, why are we making this Gzera in the whole world? So the Ritva says, because once we make the Gzera in Eretz Yisrael, with Sophic Orla is also, then we extend it to Chutz La'aretz over there as well, even though technically, because we don't want to confuse, we don't want the people are going to eat it in the Chutz La'aretz and think they're allowed to eat it in Eretz Yisrael. The Rashba actually says in one of his Chuvas that maybe it's not even that. Maybe it's more the Chachamim wanted to keep us as far away from the Goyim as possible, including not to eat their cheese. Therefore, they tried to find any excuse possible to answer it.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Okay. Anyway, the point is, Rav Nachman
no
chatnas
involved in all
this? With cheese, no, there doesn't seem to be an issue with chatnas. Not directly, anyway. Later on, the Gemara is going to say it as a series of zeros that they made to avoid chatnas, but no, cheese is not listed over there. So, yeah. Okay, so the question is, Rav Nachman Yitzchak's reason about that they use sap from Orla trees seems to work only according to Rav Eliezer, and the halacha is not like it. So how does that work? The answer is, never mind that the halacha is not like Rav Eliezer. The fact is, everybody agrees that goyish cheese is osur, that there is a gzeira on it. If it's a matter of using strap of Orla, then Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua should be disagreeing on that. Rabbi Yeshua should be saying it is mutter, according to Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak's reason. The answer is Afilu Tamer Rabbi Yeshua. You don't have to say that. You could even say that Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak's reason works according to Rabbi Yeshua as well. By the way, Agos Habach says it should be just plain Rabbi Nachman, not Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak, but okay, anyway. You could even say that this works according to Rabbi Yeshua, because Ad Kam my colleague Rabbi Yeshua alay the Rabbi Eliezer el b'kaspa de gavza. Because when does Rabbi Yeshua disagree with Rabbi Eliezer? When it comes to the sap that comes from the branches of the tree, where Rabbi Eliezer holds, even so, it's still considered the actual fruit of the tree, and Rabbi Yeshua holds that not. Al b'kaspa de peira, but when you have sap that oozes out of the fruit while it's growing. Maybe then Rabbi Yeshua agrees with Rabbi Yehuda that that is just like the fruit itself is Orla, so is the sap.
So that's real Orla because
so that would be real Orla.
Out of the tree.
Right, because it's out of the fruit. And again, in Eretz Yisrael, even if it was a sophic, it would be osir. Mm-hmm. In Chutz La'aretz, in principle, it should be mutter. But again, you know, either they made a gzera or yes. The Heiner is not, and thus, in fact, we learn in that Mishnah, in that same Mishnah in Orla, Om Rabbi Yeshua, Shamayti B'Fedosh, I heard explicitly from my Rebbe, that if you were to use to curdle milk into cheese, if you were to use the sap from the leaves or the sap from the roots or the trunk, then it would be mutter. The srapa pagin also, only if you're using sap from the unripe fruit, then it would be also mekneshu peri, because that itself is from the fruit, and therefore it would be also. So Rav Nachman's reason can work according to Rav Yeshua as well. The problem with that is, the problem with the last two answers, Bein Rav Chista, Bein Rav Nachman, is called Kitzabana. The problem is, of course, the other reasons that we said, because of Gilui, or because they use Chazir fast, or because there's milk in there, fine, that makes it why it's only mutter, but it's only also to eat. Right, but if you're talking about that they use Chaymas, if they use vinegar of Yai, which may have been Yai Nessa, or they may have used Sraf of Orla, then it should be also Bana, exactly. According to either of them, it ought to be also Bano. Kasha. Akasha.
So
that's it. When the Gemara says Kasha, it doesn't mean it's an absolute refutation of them. It means maybe they can find some way to answer it. But anyway, the point is, so far we have five or six, aside from the reasons in the Mishnah, which Rabbi Shmuel slugged up, we had five or six answers in the Gemara over here why cheese of goyim is aser.
So which way do we go? Do we go on that kasha? It's aser, the abachila and
b'anah. No, we don't. We have nothing to say in the Mishnah that's also b'anah. Only when it comes to gvinas based on yaki do you have, and only according to Rabbi Meir is it also b'anah because of the specific thing in based on yaki. You have Rashi says it's a village. Some people say that it's a place in Turkey. Whatever it is, in those days, most of the calves shechted there were for Avodah Zarah, and therefore the mayor holds that that makes it osur. The Chacham disagree because of issues of roi and niyot or whatever. But anyway, the point is we had five or six reasons in our Gemara over here. Even if we can't accept Rav Chista's or Rav Nachman's answers, we still have the other answers.
So let me ask a question: in a place today, whether the majority of people practice Avodah Zarah, you would say the same thing. It's also Asur b'Anah.
No, because what we said is Rav Meir. No, because what it is Rav Meir said in the case of Beis Yaki, most camps that are shafted there are for Avodah Zarah.
Yeah.
And not most, sorry. A minority of camps shafted there are for Avodah Zarah.
Most of them.
No, because Reb Meir holds we have to be concerned about a minority. The Chachamim just, oh, sorry. No. But Reb Meir says the majority of the camps they are shafted are for Avodah Zarah. Now, those majority of calves are a minority of the total number of animals shafted in Beis Hamikdash. But Reb Meir is concerned about the minority. The Chachamim are not. The Chachamim say, fine, if we know that a particular batch of cheese was curdled using teva from an animal shafted for Avodah Zarah, sure, it'll be also. But if not, we don't have to ask for all the cheeses b'hanah on the chance of that the material for
it. When is the majority?
No, but again, according to the mayor, the majority of calves shafted in Beis Hamikdash are for Avodah Zarah. But that's not the point, anyway. Even if you have a place where the majority of animals that are shafted are for Avodah Zarah, do they necessarily use anything from them to make cheese? Not necessarily. But here we're talking about the normal thing was to use caval.
They used
the curdled
Avodah Zarah and still took the cheese.
They would then take the stomach contents, the partially digested milk in the stomach, and use it to curdle cheese. Yeah. Okay. Anyway,
if these conditions are produced, then probably...
Then according to the Chachamim, if you knew for sure that it was, then yeah, it would be awesome. Okay, anyway, the point is, we have all these various answers. Now, Tosfos on Amud Aleph said that actually the primary reason is the matter of snakes. And since nowadays we're not worried about the jewelry of snakes, therefore, Tosfos argues cooked cheese and goyim should be mutter. However, most of the other Rishonim don't accept that. They say the fact is we do have these various other explanations in the Gemara, and they say the bottom line is it's a sakana of the Chachamim, as we see from our Mishnah, and a sakana of the Gzeira, rather, of the Chachamim, and only a greater based in can be Mavassal, as we're going to say later on. So therefore, that's it. Goyish cheese remains also. The only way it's mutter, so the post can be...
Cheese only being usher, milk is not?
That's milk we're going to discuss in the next Mishnah. But the point is that the reason why we mentioned cheese is, again, because we were mentioning Beis Hamikdash, and that led us into the discussion of other kinds of cheese. Milk is also an issue, as we're going to see in the next Mishnah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the kasha on them, but nevertheless, even if we don't accept their answers, we still have the other answers why goyish cheese should be offered. And again, I mean, you have, if a Jew washed the cheese making, some of the posts can say it'll be allowed, because then you don't have the issue of Shulman Chazir or Kava or what have you, because the Jew can wash it. Other posts can say that you actually need the Jew to be washing the milking and the cheese making. Yeah, okay. All right. Okay. We mentioned in the Mishnah, we mentioned the Pasuk, which is how Rabbi Yeshua used that to distract Rabbi Shmuel from asking further about the reason for the Gzeirah cheese. And he mentions the following pasuk, L'reach Shmanecha Tovim, the fragrance of your good oil. So now we're going to darshan those words. Dorash of Nachman V'Reder Chista, my dechiv L'reach Shmanecha Tovim, what does this pasuk mean by the good fragrance of your oil? It means L'ma Tamar Tachem Doima, what is the Tamar Tachem? In Shir Hashirim, it's the third pasuk of Shir Hashirim. The context is it's the Jewish people praising Hashem and saying that your oil, your fragrant oil is your oil is fragrant. So what is that referring to? Lama tamat chacham zomer. What is a tamat chacham like? With flotus shal palyotin. He's like a flask, like a container of palyotin, which is a type of fragrant oil. Megula reicha nodif. If it's uncovered, then the fragrance of it spreads. Mechusa ein reicha nodif. But if it's covered, then not. The point being, what is the pasuk says, the whole pasuk goes, L'reach Shmanecha Tovim, the good fragrance of your oil, the next part of the pasuk continues, Shemen Turak Shmecha, your name is like oil poured out. Meaning, when do we say, L'reach Shmanecha Tovim, that the fragrance of a Tamar Chacham is good, when it's poured out. When he's open to teaching other people, not just that he sits by himself, not just that he sits and learns by himself. Then that's
the thing I'll teach.
If you can't, so you can't. But the point is that the point is a person should. When a person teaches Torah Tamidim, then he becomes famous. Then his oil pours forth. Yeah. As Marshall says also the vort is that, for example, a person might think to himself, yeah, but if I spend my time teaching, I don't have as much time to learn on my own. My own level of learning is going to suffer. So we tell them, think of it like this: when you have a container full of this fragrant oil, this palyotin, if you take it and pour it into another container, the other container benefits from it. It gains the fragrance, and you also still have the fragrance that was poured out from your container. The same thing. Your container is the body. Your oil is your neshama, is your Torah. Pour it out to somebody else, and then you'll both benefit. Rather than you keep it to yourself, and yes, you have the benefit, but even so, you're keeping it closed, and nobody ever knows about it. And you yourself don't have the full effect of it.
Hmm. not only that, but you might be able to teach to someone who's like himself killing, going to become a big Talmud.
This is also true, yeah.
And it will miss other lives.
This is also true, yeah. V'loy oed, ala dvorim shemachusim mimenu misgavim loy. Not only that, but if a person does that, if the Talmud Chacham goes and teaches to other people, then things that are hidden from him become revealed to him. Well, wait. The Rashi says it means because, like this, when you teach, mitamida yosin mikulam, you learn from your Talmidim most of all, and therefore he learns even more that he didn't realize before. Tosfos says a different explanation, actually. Tosfos says, you know, we say in Pirkei Avos and Perek Vav, we say that a person who learns Torah Lishma, nenenu menu eitzu b'tushia, that people are able to benefit from advice and wisdom from him. So therefore, the idea, you know, that people will come to him for advice. So therefore, in that sense, things that people usually keep to themselves, they will reveal to him because they want his advice on it. So in that sense, that's another one. The benefit of that is that then he's able to help these people with the things that otherwise they keep to themselves and they wouldn't be able to. Yeah. Okay. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, the end of that same pasuk, L'reach Shmanach HaTovim, goes, it says, Alkein Alomois Ahivocha, therefore the Alomois love you. So what does Alomois mean? The simple meaning of Alomois means young women. But in terms of Shir Hashirim, the whole Shir Hashirim is a metaphorical debate, dialogue, whatever, between Hashem and the Jewish people, where it's compared. The Jewish people are like Hashem's wife, like his beloved one. The other nations are like other girls. The other gods, so to speak, are like other men, whatever, etc. So in that sense, it fits in the pasuk over there, but in our terms, karive alumos, you can understand the word alumos to be similar to the word alumos, which means hidden. So therefore, alumos, ahivucha, the hidden things, meloshen halim, yeah. So the hidden things love you, yeah. V'loyo, yalashon malach hamavis, oh yeah, but not only that, but the malach hamavis loves such a person. Shenema, is this who teaches Torah to others? Who teaches Torah to others, Shenema Alomois Ahivucha, Karibe Almoves, because the word Alomois can also be broken up into two words, Almoves, on death. So even Almoves, even the Malach Almoves, who's in charge of death, is also Ahivucha. He also loves such a person.
Because he cannot put him to death?
Well, so one second. Not necessarily because he can't. The fact is everybody still dies, but Marsha says the reason is, Marsha relates it to the fact we find when Moshe Rabbeinu came to receive the Torah and eventually convinced the Malachim that the Torah has to be given down here on earth, it says all the Malachim gave him presents, taught him secrets, even the Malachim of it taught him a secret, the famous secret of how to stop a plague using Torah, which later on Aaron uses in Parshas Torah. So in that sense, therefore, we're saying that hidden things are revealed to him, and even the Malachim of it comes and reveals hidden things to him. Another explanation I saw from one of the Mefarshim, Ein Yaakov, called Ein Eliyahu, he suggests something like this. Usually when a person dies, there's a good in it that he's going to get his scar. There's a bad in it, on the other hand, that the world is lacking him. When a person is teaching Torah, then the primary thing is the scar. So then, like the Malach HaMavis loves him for the fact that he can do his job and know that he's not doing a bad thing for him, he's doing a good thing for him, that now this kind of Chacham is able to receive his scar. Not only that, but such a person gets to inherit both worlds, both this world and the next world. Because yet another meaning of alamos, we can relate it to the word olamos, world. So therefore, the word, he has both worlds, in other words. Yeah.
This world and the next world.
This world and the next world, yeah. So now the Mishnah says, "Ve'elu dvarim shel ovik achav masurin ve'eni surin isurana." Now the following things belonging to that come from goyim are also, but they're not also b'hana. So now I mentioned earlier in the Masechta that you have in all Masechta the various kinds of isurim that we're talking about. Different ones are of different kinds. You have the kind that are also because the goy worships of a dezara, which are the things we learned in the first parak and part of our parak. You have things because you have things that are also because they're immoral, which are things that we had earlier in our parak about animals and about getting haircuts from them and so on and so forth. And then you have things that are also regardless, even if it's the most moral guy, even if it's a monotheistic guy or whatever, just because he's a guy. Those are the ones in our mission. No, it's not so much a choik. No, these are not things that are also daraisa. Most of these things that we're going to mention are also dirabana. Well, some of them are going to be also daraisa because there's a concern that something treif was mixed into them, or there's a certainty that some. Right. Even the ones dirabana, the reason with most, we're going to see in the Gemara what the reasons for various ones are. The ones that are not daraisa, the ones that are not because of an actual issur mixed in, are because of a gzera dirabana. But that applies across the board to all goyim. Okay. So. Number one, cholav shechalva erik chachavim ve'en yisturo re'ehu. Number one, as you were mentioning before, milk that was milked by a goy without a Jew watching. And by the way, you have the very famous story in this connection that's told about Ramnath and Chernobyl, where one time they served him some coffee with milk, where the milk, it turned out, was colovacum, and they didn't realize it when they first poured it for him. And afterwards, they find out, and they run in to tell him, and Ramnath says, what coffee? What milk? He didn't see it at all, because the Rebbe quote on the Sikha a few times. Yeah, we just started the Mishnah.
Okay.
All right. So why is it? Because cholov shafol ve'akum the ein yisrael ve'evil. When milk is milked by a goy, a Jew will not be able to see it. A Jew who's on a level that he should be on, like Rav Nachum, is not going to be able to see such milk.
Meaning
as in perceive it. He doesn't realize it's there. As far as he's concerned, it's not there yet. Okay, now, the Mishnah just said, the following things from Goyim Ha'Osir, the Eini Surin Issur Hanah, but they're not also Hanah. And the first one was Cholop Shechobo, because Cholop Eini Surah Re'ehu was milk by a Jew, milk that was milked by a Goy without a Jew watching. Cholop Akum. And of course, you know, we have the very famous heter of Rav Moshe that everybody knows about that nowadays when milk is under government supervision, maybe this doesn't apply so much. First of all, there's the idea that the Frida could ever mention and Ard ever mention it many times, the idea that drinking milk that was not where a Jew didn't watch the milking is poigim a person's amunah. It harms a person's amunah. So even there may be a technical heter of yalacha that it should be allowed, nevertheless, don't do it. Even if you know...
I'm
not going against. I mean, as a matter of strict halacha, Rav Moshe has a point, but as a matter of beyond halacha, Rav Moshe himself never drank it. That's true. But also, Rav Moshe limited it, but he still limited it, the application of it. It's basically only when you really can't get Chol of Yisrael. And I think he also said it really shouldn't be done for children because children should be drinking Chol of Yisrael. So there's a lot of details.
According to Rav Moshe, the strict interpretation of what you said, you can't go into the local 7-Eleven and choose Chalav Akum over Chalav Yisrael.
Yeah, indeed.
If you're in the Midwest, the Rebbe always said, if you go to come to me a question about Akha, you have to ask a Rav.
Fine. And
you see that here, he did not.
No, one sentence. Rav Moshe is not the only Rav in the world. When the Rebbe would send people to Rabbanim, there's a matter of halacha and there's a matter of beyond halacha. As a matter of technical halacha, maybe, but as a matter of how we fear this, that we're concerned about safety and amuna and whatever, we're not going to do it. We're not going to avail ourselves of any such effort. With that, and by the way, it's worth mentioning also. I saw something interesting. That one of the Rabbanim of London, Rabbi Yosef Hirsch Duner, one time says that he once went to visit a Goyish farm there, someplace near London, and he's talking with the farmer, and the farmer tells him that he knows how to adulterate Tureifa milk to make it appear to the inspectors like kosher milk. He knows how much extra fat to add in and how much extra whatever, So it still could happen. So even in a place that has effects. No, he didn't say it to the Moshe. I don't know. But the point is, even in places where there is supposed to be government supervision, yeah, like you said, of course, you know, it's still possible to mislead them. Okay. Anyway, so that's
fine.
Okay, but pas vashem on shalahem. Also, other things of goyim that are also are their bread and their oil. However, the Mishnah interjects: Rebbe your base dinner he tira Hashem. Rebbe and his base din were matir oil. Now, Rashi says we shouldn't be goyim this because the Rebbe who was matir it was actually not Rebbe who wrote the Mishnah or composed the Mishnah. It was his grandson, Rebbe Yehuda Nasiya. What is that doing in the Mishnah over here? The Mishnah was composed by Rebbe. Things aren't being added to it after that. So, what is it doing in the Mishnah? A lot of other Rishonim say, though, the Tosfos and many other Rishonim disagree, and they say that they give a couple of answers. One of them is that maybe in fact the Rebbe of our Mishnah, yes, is Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya. Sometimes in the Yerushalmi in particular, you often find that the Nasiyim in general were called Rebbe. The Rebbe doesn't mean Rabbi Yehuda Anasi necessarily. Fine, it means Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya. But what is it doing in our Mishnah? One possibility. So they talk about different possibilities. Tosfos mentioned maybe Rebbe wanted to be Masiris, but they didn't accept that Heser in his times. Then his grandson, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, came and was officially Masiris with his base din, and then it became officially accepted. So another point is that when we say in our Mishnah, Rebbe was Masiris, it means Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, the one who wrote the Mishnah, was Masiris, but it didn't get accepted until two generations later when his grandson republished the Heser. That's one. Because people didn't accept it yet. That it should
Rebbe,
be.
They didn't.
And from his grandson, they did. Maybe because Rebbe didn't do it. Maybe. Well, okay, so it could happen. They also talk about maybe, in fact, some of the Rishonim talk about, that maybe, in fact, you're right, it is Rebbe Yehuda Nasiya. It is Rebbe's grandson over here. So what is it doing in the Mishnah? Because they added it into the Mishnah. Usually they didn't add anything into the Mishnah after Rebbe's time. But here they added it, among other things, because otherwise anybody, no, not by mistake. First of all, it could have been by mistake. It could have been they wrote it on the side and it got included later. That's why Rashi would say we're not going to fit. But we could say also that, fine, you know, they added it into the Mishnah because everybody's going to wonder otherwise. What do you mean? The Mishnah is saying Shemen is Osir, and we all know, we all eat, we all drink oil of Goyim, we all use olive oil from Goyim all the time. What's going on? So therefore, they had to add it in. So therefore, they had to add it in order to clarify. Okay. Anyway, so that's that. Vashlokos, also another thing of Goyim that is also is food that they cooked, the Bishalakum. Ukvoshim shdarka shlokas means cooked food. Hold on. Later on, I'm on a test. We're going to deal in more detail with exactly what a food needs to be bishalak.
I'm talking about a real shear, not the end. That's why. Good question.
Okay. No. It's a valid question. Shlokas means things that are cooked. Later on, on Daf Lamed Ches, we'll deal with the details of what exactly is included in cooked food. That's where we're going to have the whole concept of that it's something that can't be eaten raw, something that's olal shulchan malachim. All those details are going to be dealt with later on in the Gemara. By the way, though, I mean, the Ran asks the question, why do we need to list bread and shlokas separately anyway? Isn't bread is something baked? Baking is basically similar to cooking. You're using heat on it. Why list them separately? So first, you have
everything that's baked contains bread. And
not no. But bread over here means bread made out of wheat or barley or what have you, right? Bread.
Yeah.
So in that case, then what's the practical difference between it and shlokas?
And it could be you just said.
That's not the point. The point is bread should be included in shlokas. Shlokas is anything that can't be eaten raw, to which heat is applied. Bread should be in the same category. So now you have some of the Rishonim explain that actually these were two different Gzeiras. Maybe first there was some of the Rishonim say first the Gzeira was made on cooked foods. They didn't include bread at first because bread everybody needs. Later on they found the need to include bread also. Others say the other way around. First they made an Isser on bread because of chasmus. Later on they found it necessary to include shlokas as well. Anyway, the Ran's Shitta, which is brought in the tour, is that it means actually that if you're talking about, for example, you have bread, so the bread of Goyim would actually be included in shlokas. When we say that bread, according to him, in order for bread to be mutter, it would have to be that a Jew actually baked it. The Beis Yosef discusses it at some length in the Torah. According to the Ran's Shitta, it would come out that basically if the Goy were... If the goy was involved too much in the baking, in the making of the bread, if he needed it, for example, and a Jew baked it, it would in fact be offered, according to the Ram. So wait, we'll get into that later. Okay. Anyway, ukvoshim shadarkan losis losechem yayin b'chaymet. Also, what's also is things that are pickled, into which it's normal to put in wine or vinegar. So those kinds of things are also because of course where would the wine come from? It's probably wine of grain. Utris trufa. Then another thing which is also is mint tris. So tris is a kind of fish. Rashi says it's a small salted fish. Some other Rishonim say that actually it's tuna fish. Whatever it is, something related to tuna, anyway. Whatever it is something that they mince it up, they grind it up into pieces. So therefore, you don't know whether it had fins and scales or not. So therefore, you have a problem. V'tzir she'en badoga kilvis she'ketes bay. Also, another thing that comes from Goyim that is also is tzir, it's fish juice that does not have a kilvis swimming around in it. Rashi learns that a kilvis is actually in and of itself a tray for fish. However, Rashi says it lives only in tzir of kosher fish. It won't be able to live in the tzir if the tzir includes material from today's fish.
You mean the living organism?
It's a living creature swimming inside the barrel. So you have a barrel of tzir, and
wow.
If you have a kilvis swimming around in it, then Rashi learns that shows that it is that shows that it's kosher tzir, because if it was tzir from tzir animals, or if it contained or from tzir fish, or if it contained anything, if it contained any tzir from tzir fish, then the kilvis would not be able to live in it. That's how Rashi learns. A fish that shows that it's kosher, even though it itself is not. Right.
The fish itself is not kosher.
The fish itself, the kilvus itself, according to Rashi, is not kosher, but nevertheless, though, the fact that it's in the sphere shows that it is.
So does that mean you have to put a kilvus inside every barrel of sphere before you eat it?
No, I mean, obviously, if you have something showing on the barrel that was passed by Jews, then it's also fine, but it's... here we're talking about that it comes from goy. You buy a barrel of sphere from a goy.
And it's got a dead
kilvus. No good.
But I mean, the presence of the tree, because the kilvus would not make it kosher.
But that's the thing. According to Rashi, it's a sign that it's from kosher. It doesn't make it kosher, but according to Rashi, it shows that this tree must be from kosher fish, because otherwise a kilvus wouldn't be able to live in it. Many other Rishonim have a problem with that explanation, and they say, actually, that the kilvis is actually a kosher fish. They say it was a very common thing that when you packed a barrel of tzir, you would put in one of that type of fish to show, to label it what type of tzir it is. A kilvis, according to them, being a kosher fish, and now they're not, now, if we're talking about that these are experts who pack this stuff, they're not going to mix in tzir of kosher and tzir of fish together because it won't taste good. It'll ruin the taste. Therefore, if you have a kilvis swimming in there, it shows that they're demonstrating that this is tzir from a kilvis. They're not going to take a kilvis and put it into a barrel of tzir.
Is it still alive even then?
No, mishatetis, by right, that's swimming around in it. Why would it kill?
Because it's from a kosher to a non-kosher.
No. Okay, so the verse is like this. According to these other Rishonim, the Ramban and many others, they explain that the kilvis is a kosher fish.
And it's alive
inside the tzir of other kilvis. What the goy did is he took a bunch of kilvis, he packed a barrel, he made a barrel full of their tzir, of their juice. He put one live kilvis in there so that when you open it up, you'll recognize, this is kilvis. This is kilvis juice. So now what's the problem? You're not going to say that he'll have mixed in some juice of kilvis and some juice of other strafer fish, because that would ruin the taste, and he wouldn't do it. He being a craftsman, he doesn't want to ruin his professional reputation. For the same reason, he wouldn't take a barrel of strafer tzir, like from a catfish or something, and put a kilvis inside it, because, again, then once people find out that it's the wrong thing, nobody would ever buy from him again, because it has to be labeled properly.
When Oli Terry gives away those goldfish to the campers, most of them die in water.
Okay.
And here they're living inside of the tear.
Okay.
That's
freshwater fish, saltwater fish, I don't know. Anyway, so according to that, if you have tear that does not have a kilvis in it, then according to Rashi's explanation, you have no way of knowing whether it's tear of kosher or a tzir fish, because you don't have anything that should be living in it. According to everybody else, it means that you have no way, again, you have no way of knowing. It could be a barrel of old tzir fish, and therefore no good.
Does anyone say that they just put a whole fish on top of it so that you'll know what it is, and it's a dead fish and you're supposed to eat that too?
I don't know. I don't think so. There are, there are some of the Rishonim, though, who don't have the gear to kill this over here. They just say, meaning that you have some kind of fish recognizable as kosher fish in it. Because, again, by the same logic, it could be tzir. It could be a tzir of sardines, and you'd have a sardine in there. It could be tzir of salmon, and you'd have a salmon swimming around in there, et cetera. So it doesn't specifically have to be a kilvis, according to them. It just has to be whatever kind of fish that you recognize to be a kosher fish. Okay. Onward. The chilek, another kind of thing that you buy from goyim that's also to eat, is chilek, which is small fish. We learned about it yesterday, and actually I misstated over there. I misstated that chilek is also minced. It's not. Chilek is whole fish, but there's small fish which have not yet grown fins and scales. It's a species of fish where when it's young, it doesn't yet have fins and scales. Well, I said that, but I also added that it was ground up, which I was wrong on that. That's Tiris Turupa. Chilek, because it's not ground up, but the problem is you can't recognize whether it's kosher fish or not. They might have mixed in Tiris fish in there. Therefore, you have a problem with it. Also, the kodesh of chiltis, another thing that you can't buy from goyim and eat, would be a piece of chiltis. Chiltis is an herb that is a very, very sharp herb. They use it sometimes for some kinds of medicinal purposes or whatever. Some people were in the habit of drinking some of it, of mixing it with liquid and drinking it every day, whatever it is. The point is, it's a very sharp thing, and therefore, later on, the problem is, we're going to learn and we're going to deal with in the Gemara, that they cut it with a knife, and their knives are treif, because they've used them for treif of meat, whatever. Umelach shalkundis, and also shalkundis salt, which later on, on Lamates, we'll deal with what that is. It's a type of salt that has various other ingredients mixed in here, which are treif ingredients. So all of those, harei lo asurin, all these things are also ba'eni surin isur hana, but none of them are also ba'hana. Now, why some of them shouldn't be? I mean, for example, the pickled things that might have that normally have wine and vinegar in them, why indeed shouldn't they be also ba'ana? We'll deal with later. Okay. So the beginning of the question is like this: Kol of l'may nechushlo. When it comes to milk, what do you think you need to be concerned about that you can't have milk that was not where the milking was not washed by a Jew? Imishum echlufi. Are you concerned that the goy may swap out? He may. Instead of giving you milk from a cow, he may give you milk from a horse or something. He won't be able to swap it out so easily. Tohur chiver tomer yoruk, because milk from kosher animals is white. Milk from treifa animals is greenish. It has a slightly different color, so it'll be noticeable if he tries to swap it out.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. Milk from treifa animals. Yes. Well, it depends which ones, but yeah, certain kinds, the common kinds of treifa farm animals, yeah, the milk of every animal has slightly different proportions of different things in it, protein, fats, and sugars, and what have you. So the fact that also, so yeah, it makes different colors, and it also makes different properties, as we said before, and as we're going to say now. The Inishum Iarubi, are you concerned that maybe the goy mixed in some treifa milk in with the kosher milk, little enough where the mixture wouldn't be noticeable?
Oh, did you say Yarok is green or yellow?
Yellow. Yarok has a number of different meanings. In Gemara terminology, Yarok can mean green, it can mean yellow. There's a Tosfos and Sukkah that even discusses maybe sometimes it can mean blue. The kashrus over here means yellowish.
Yellowish.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. The Mishum Iarubi, are you concerned that maybe the goy mixed in some milk from a treif animal in with the milk from the kosher animal? In that case, you can solve that by nekum. In that case, turn the milk into cheese.
Right.
Take some rennet, put it in, and make a cheese. Oh, you know, but...
Well,
no. The Omamar, because we said before, Chol of Tahar Oymet, Chol of Tameh Ener Oymet. Because we said before that only milk from kosher animals is able to curdle into cheese.
Yeah.
Is able to curdle into cheese. Milk from treif animals is not. And Steinsaltz points out a reason for it, by the way, because milk from treif animals has a higher percentage of sugars, so therefore it doesn't turn into cheese. It just ferments instead and becomes like sour milk or whatever. Whatever it is, the point is. So you can do that. So you take the milk, you turn it into cheese, and then you'll know whether, yeah. Speaking of, by the way, I forgot to mention before when we were in the sugya about cheese, I forgot to mention that you have a machlokas, which I mentioned it briefly the other day, but there's a machlokas rishonim whether, okay, so we established before that if the goyim used the skin of the keva of a nevela to curdle the cheese, then it's osur. What if they don't? What if they use, so we mentioned before about them using sap, for example. What if they use flowers? What if they use other kinds of vegetable-based rennet or whatever? Yes, stuff that in and of itself is kosher. Is the cheese kosher or not? So some of the Rishonim say maybe yes, as a matter of fact, given that we, in that case, maybe we don't have any of the concerns that we said before.
The Rabbanim
made a Xeda, but they would hold that the Xeda is only when they use keva, only when they use the stomach contents or the skin of the stomach contents or whatever. Some of the other Rishonim, for example, the Rambam, hold that no, once the Xeda is, then that's it.
Is that gezera independent of the gezera of Chol of Yisrael?
So that's what we're saying over here, that only Chol of Tahar is going to congeal and become cheese. So therefore, that's the point.
Oh, so right. So
right.
Therefore, you can use that as a...
Right.
No.
So anyway, so
vegetables.
The bottom line in halacha is it says in Shulchan Aruch, it says in general the halacha should be that it's also even if they use vegetable based rennet. However, in places where they have the minhag based on their poskim to be accurate, fine, they can continue to follow that stuff. But the fact by and large for everybody is that it doesn't matter what kind of rennet they use, goyish cheese is also period. Okay. Returning to our Gemara now. Well, goyish milk, right. Okay. Anyway, so back to our Gemara over here. If you're concerned about that there might be trace of milk mixed in it, then make it into cheese. The kosher milk will curdle into cheese. The trace of milk will not. And therefore, that's it. Then you're left with a block of kosher cheese.
No,
the answer is, eat a kabbalah l'gvina hachinam. Fine, if you want the milk.
Yeah,
if you want the milk to be able to make cheese, sure, that would be a possibility. Hachab mayaskin into kabbalah l'kampa. But here we're talking about, for example, you want the milk to make into kampa, which is a dip like sour cream that they used to make in those days that was milk-based. So you want the milk in liquid form. You can't turn it into cheese.
Kampa was very popular because they couldn't really store milk.
Because they couldn't really store raw milk. Yeah, of course, it would spoil, right?
They didn't have refrigeration.
Exactly. Okay, so the question is, v'nishko mine koli, fine, so let's do like this. We'll take a little bit of the milk that we bought from a guy, v'nekum, and make that little bit into cheese, and that way we'll see if anything comes out become part of the cheese, then we know there's shaved milk in there. If the whole thing became a good block of cheese, then we know it's good, then we know it's 100% cow's milk or whatever, and you're good. The answer is, given to Bachar or Nami, you can assume they're like tiny, because even with milk from a kosher animal, not all of it becomes cheese. You have the curds that are in the milk becomes the cheese, and the whey, the liquid part, flows away. So you have, not all of it becomes cheese anyway. Therefore, Lekel and Mekel Malod and Milsa. So therefore, there's no way of figuring it out for sure, because you're always going to have some residue left when you make cheese anyway. So like this, you won't realize, in other words, you have milk is composed if it has solids and it has liquids. The solids become the cheese, mostly. The liquids, with a little bit of the solids left in them, but it's mostly liquid, flows away. Well, if you had, let's say, for example, this was 90% kosher milk and 10% treifa milk, you'll never know, because the 10% treifa milk will flow out with the whey. You'll think there was just more whey. You won't realize. The Iboy thing, or another way of answering it is, even fine, let's go back to our assumption before that you wanted the milk to use for cheese, you can't. Because true, treif milk will not curdle into cheese. However, you still may have bits of it left in the crevices or between the drops or whatever of milk that became cheese. So therefore, we can't say that even if you wanted to buy it for cheese, go and curdle it and see whatever's left. Because whatever's left, most of it will be kosher milk, but there'll be those little bits of treif milk stuck in the crevices of the cheese, and therefore that'll still be awesome. Many of the Rishonim have a girsa over here instead of the Boris Emer. They say that the Gira says rather hashtag, it's not a separate answer, it's hashtag the office lahaki. Now that you pointed out that detail, that even in normal cheese making you always have the whey left over, then it means that therefore even turning all of the milk you bought from the goy into cheese is not going to help. Because you have no way of knowing what percentage of it was milk and what percentage kosher milk and what percentage was treifa milk, and you likely end up with some treifa milk left in the crevices and the holes inside the cheese over there, and therefore when you eat the cheese you'll be eating that as well, and it'll be awesome. The bottom line is it doesn't work to do that, and therefore that is why milk that was milked by a goy is also, because he may have mixed in, not because it may be 100% treifa milk, but because he may have mixed in some percentage of treifa milk. Which wouldn't affect the color, and you wouldn't know that, and you wouldn't know the difference. Yeah. Okay. Then we said about pas. Then we said in the Mishnah, the next thing of goyim that is also is bread. Okay. Amar of Kahana, Amar of Yechanan, pas loyhutra b'beisim. Bread of goyim was not declared mutter by beisim. So the question is, what does that mean? If you're saying it wasn't made mutter by beisim. Never mind that. We're not talking about where it was. If you describe it as are obviously solid. What we're saying is, in general, bread baked by goyim is awesome. Bread baked by goyim is awesome. So Rabbi Yochanan is pointing out that this was not declared mutter by Beis Din. So what does that mean? It wasn't made mutter by Beis Din. Implying the fact that Rabbi Yochanan has to point that out. The klal de ikaman de shari. Does that mean to imply that some people hold it's mutter, even though it wasn't officially declared mutter by Beis Din? The answer is ain. Yes, as a matter of fact, there are. And we know this, the Kiyosid of Dimi Omer, because when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported a story like this. Pam achat yotze Rebbe l'sada. One time Rebbe went out to the field, v'hevi obi kuchav l'fon of pas puni ma'chasa, and a goy brought in front of him bread that was baked in a puni, which is a type of oven. The normal ovens in those days had the opening on the top. You'd stick the bread to the side and it would come out flat like pizza bread. A puni is an oven that opens from the side, more like our oven. So the goy brought him bread that was baked in a puni, meaning it was good quality bread. And it was Martha saw, it was Rita saw, which is a huge loaf of bread, like 20 pounds.
It was a kasana.
Yeah, it was like one of those kasana loaf of bread, yeah. Omer Rebbe, kamen noa, tachzu, ma roha kamen ma oisra. So Rebbe said, look how nice this bread is. Why did the Chachamim see fit to ask for this? So what does that mean? What do you mean, ma roha Chachamim? What do you mean, what did the Chachamim see fit to ask for it? We know why the Chachamim saw fit. Mishum chasnus. The reason is, because we're going to sort of discuss on the next Omer, because of chasnus, because you don't want too much socialization with the goyim. Ella, no. The question is, ma roha Chachamim lo oisra basodeh? No, rather what Rebbe was asking is, why did the Chachamim see fit to make it an absolute across-the-board rule that you can't eat such bread, even out in the field where, now we talked, for example, the other day with drinking beer of goyim. That we said it's also if you're drinking in a place where it's a kavua dika thing, like drinking in a bar or whatever, but you're allowed, let's say, as an akroi, you're allowed as a one-time thing, like you're sitting outside the store or something. So by the same logic, Rebbe is saying, by the same logic, chasnus is more of an issue, sure, if you go to the goy's house, you eat it in the city or whatever, but if you're just eating it out in the field, what should be the problem with it?
Now, this thing, the sada, that was only something that was innovated by the Amaroyim.
No.
Yeah?
No, as far as beer, yes.
Only with beer.
No, but still, okay. Yeah, but they were basing themselves on the distinction that we're saying everything.
So you mean there was more foods that are permissible on...
No. In other words, one second. Hold on. We're going to see over here. Wait.
Okay.
So, kisvurin on loyma, hita Rebbe hapa. Now, people who overheard this thought that Rebbe had been master bread.
Okay.
However, v'loyhi, that's not so. Rebbe loy hita hapa. So Rabbi Yochanan wants to inform us, you should know, that Rebbe was not actually master. They thought once Rebbe is saying, why did the Chachamim see fit to ask for it in the field, people misunderstood to mean that's it. Rebbe is making it, is saying that it is mutter in the field. And maybe even if it's mutter in the field, it's mutter everywhere. But no.
Besides beer, is there any food that is utter b'ir and mutter b'sada?
Maybe bread over here. Let's learn through the story.
We're still going through with bread.
Okay.
So he also believed that it was also.
So Rebbe knew that it was also. He said, I wonder why they made it also in the field as well, where on the face of it, there's no issue of chasnus. And people misunderstood Rebbe to be saying, that's it, it should be Moses.
Right, but why didn't they think that Rebbe was saying that it should be field.
Okay, maybe it should be mutter only in the field. The point is that it should be mutter in some places. Rabbi Yochanan is saying the past was not mutter in Beis Din at all, period.
Whether in the field or someplace else.
Okay. Rabbi Yosef, the Tamer of Shmuel Yehuda, or Rabbi Yosef, or some state of Shmuel Yehuda says that's not how it happened, like Chachayim Meister. No, that's not how it happened. El Omru, no, they said the story was like this. One time Rebbe went to a certain place, and he saw the Talmidim were very short on bread. They didn't have enough bread to eat. Omar Rebbe ain't on palter. So according to the second version, Rebbe says, is there no palter here in town? A palter means a commercial baker. So people thought that Rebbe meant that they're asking if there's a goyish baker, implying, and if there is one, then bread baked by a goyish baker should be mutter, by a goyish commercial baker should be mutter.
That's funny.
But no, because most of the time, palters in those days were going. However, Rebbe only meant, is there a baker or Yisrael? Because Rebbe didn't specify, so that's the thing. That's what Rabbi Yochanan is clarifying. Pass like Hutruba based in because this that Rebbe was asking, if there's a palter, he didn't mean to imply is there a goyish palter in which case you can eat his bread. He was asking, isn't there a Jewish palter over here? Why are we so short of bread? And a Jewish palter, of course, you can eat his bread. Okay. Now, Almud of Chelboy. So now, on the face of it, therefore, it sounds like the whole concept of bread being mutter, of bread of goyim being mutter, it sounds like the whole thing is based on a misunderstanding. However, Amar of Chelboy, so Reb Chelboy says, Afilu l'manda Amar palta over Gefavim, even according to the opinion that Rebbe meant a goyish baker, that would apply, when would it be mutter? Lo yamorin, el would like a palta Yisrael. That would only apply if there was no Jewish baker around. But if there is a Jewish baker around, then no, that would not apply. Wait.
It wasn't the chet.
Hold on. You see that there's a chet on it, which implies the halacha is like that, but how can it be the halacha? So wait, one second. Then Rabbi Yochanan says, even according to the opinion that Rebbe meant a goyish baker, implying that if there was one, it would be mutter. That would only apply in the field. So there's your answer, Aaron. but not in the city, mishum chasnas, because of chasnas. So now there's a lot to talk about this. First of all, I mean, one second. First of all, like this, if the whole thing is based on a misunderstanding, then how are we discussing what the halacha should be? How are we discussing different opinions? What do you mean opinions? It was all a misunderstanding. So many of the Rishonim, so there are some of the Rishonim say that the Ramah, I think, says, for example, that Reb Chelba and Reb Yochanan are only talking about, according to those who misunderstood the story, what they would think maybe that it would be a Goyish baker only if there's no Jewish baker, only Basada, not the ear. But according to his understanding, the halacha is not like any of that. The halacha is Tas Akum is also trivial. Most of the other Rishonim do not take that view. They say that, yes, maybe it was a misunderstanding, but the fact of the matter is, we see that people are not noyeg to only eat pasisuro. We see that people are noyeg in various ways to eat pasakum, to eat bread based by goyim. That implies, therefore, that the gzera itself is not really a valid gzera in the first place, as we're going to learn later on. A gzera only of the chachamim only applies for all time, only if it was accepted by most of the Sibur to begin with, and Reva Sibur Yecholim Lamed, where most of the people are able to manage with it. Here we see, the very fact that we see that people are eating Pas Akum implies that it was never really fully accepted like that. Therefore, there was reason to be makel on it. Therefore, there's reason to carve out exceptions.
Now, I heard a story, I don't know if it's true, that during the war, someone used to eat Pas Halter rather than Pas that was baked by Jews, because the goyim didn't have, the Jews that was breaking the bread didn't do Netilas Yadayim, and so he would go to the goyim, who where they're not mitzvah on Netilas Yadayim, and that was more kosher at the time than the bread that was baked by goyim during the war. Because they were tamei,
okay.
They didn't do
Netilas. Could be. I haven't heard of that, but okay.
Okay.
Anyway, so Tosfos mentions that you don't make Zera on the Sibur unless the Reva Sibur Yecholim Lamed Ba, so therefore we see that, and here most of the Sibur apparently can't manage it. Now, so then you have a lot of different explanations among the Rishonim, then, what exactly is Mutter and what is Osir. Part of it is based on the question, when we have Reb Chelba and we have Reb Yochanan stating their opinions over here, is Reb Yochanan adding to Reb Chelba that it has to be that there's no Palter Yisrael, and even within that, eating from a Palter Goy, it also has to be only in the city, but not only in the field, but not in the city. Maybe the other way around. Maybe Rav Yochanan is being more makel than Rav Chelba and saying that even if there is a palter you throw all around, you are allowed to eat from a palter over to Chavim if it's in the field. Or maybe each one is saying something independent.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a variety of opinions among Rishonim, and on top of that, you have what I was mentioning before. What the Ran says, that even you have, for example, you have bread that was kneaded by a goy. And he says that if you have bread that was kneaded by a goy, even if a Jew baked it, it would still be osur. The Ran said that. The Ran is very machmer, and the Torah brings that. So even if it was kneaded by a goy,
but baked by a Jew,
it would, right? So it would have to be, for example, that right. It would have to be, for example, that the Jew. Now it would be mutter, for example, to take some sourdough from a goy and mix it into your bread and bake it. It would be allowed. For example, you take a batch of dough from a goy and you reshape it. Then that would also make it mutter. But
turn it on the oven.
Turning on the oven. One second. Now, hold on. You have Rishonim who say that there's no difference whether just turning on the oven or just throwing in a piece of wood is not enough. In other words, even according to the Rishonim who disagree with the Ran and say that it's okay if a goy kneaded and baked the bread involved with it somehow. Some of them say it's enough to put in a piece of wood or to turn on the pilot light or what have you. Some of them say the Jew has to be involved in the actual baking process itself.
Yeah,
not necessarily. At least he has to light the fire, not just put in an extra piece of wood into an existing fire, for example.
More involved than just putting a switch.
Right, exactly. And then you also have there's a further argument among the Rishonim, this that we're saying over here about Palter. So in the end, are we saying that there's more of a heter for a commercial baker, because then maybe there's less of an issue of chasnos, but not for a private person? or maybe not. Maybe once we're saying it's mutter under certain circumstances, then it's mutter, then it's mutter, regardless whether the baker is a commercial baker or a or a private person.
So you have, we should go by the Mishnah. That's so simple and so straightforward.
True. No, he means another. Oh. You have many different opinions. That's true.
Don't bring any more foods into this.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. The bottom line halacha as brought in Shulchan. Okay. Fine, but the Mishnah just said pas vashem shalom. The Mishnah didn't elaborate what kind of bread. So okay.
Any kind of bread.
Look, if you could, okay.
Are you dipping it in olive oil?
There's no question if Pas Yisrael is available and it's at least as good quality as Pas Akum, then definitely you should be eating that. And it, by the way, it says in Shulchan Aruch, even those who eat Pas Akum during the year should be machman during Aseret Metrova. So
and Elo or just
no, just Aseret Metrova, it says in Shulchan Aruch. But again, with all of these different opinions, in Shulchan Aruch it's summarized. In Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber does not accept, even though the Mechaber in Beis Yosef discusses extensively the opinion of the Ram. In Shulchan Aruch, he does not bring it. In Shulchan Aruch, he just says that it's mutter from a commercial baker, as long as a Jew was involved in the baking. And then you have different opinions whether it's enough to throw in a piece of wood or whether he actually has to light the fire. That ends up being, I think, of Sfaradim versus Ashkenazim. Because of the Mechaber versus the Rama. Because they would hold a stick of wood is not enough. You have to actually light
the
fire.
Can you indulge us to talk about Cheerios?
What about them? I mean, One second. You're talking about, is that pass?
Is that pass?
I don't know.
Is there an exception for Cheerios?
I'm not sure, actually, what is considered pass for that purpose.
That's all pass.
But, there is a real bread. I don't know.
The Sfaradim say what?
If I remember correctly, Sfaradim say that a Jew actually has to light. No, maybe, you know what? I think that's by Bishul Akum. Never mind. I think that's by Bishul Akum. By pass Akum, the Rambam holds, and the Mechaber brings it, that as long as a Jew was involved somehow, for example, throwing in a piece of wood, it's mainly a matter of hechter. It's mainly a matter of, to make it distinguishable, to realize that there is an issue of pass Akum. After all, and therefore, as long as a Jew is involved somehow, then fine, you've dealt with that. But again, there is still also the difference between a commercial baker versus a private baker, where a private person, if he bakes bread, there's more of an issue with it, because then you have more of an issue of chasness than with a commercial baker. And obviously, it's not really a question of whether it's not really so much a question of whether he's a commercial baker. Is he baking this bread to eat at home, or is he finding the seller? If you have a goyish friend who's a baker, but he's baking bread to eat at home, that's past Shabbat Abayis. If you have an individual person who bakes a local bread and plans to sell it, for that purpose, he's considered a palter.
We're attaching all these different scenarios. The Mishnah is straightforward.
Because the Mishnah is straightforward, but that's why we have a Gemara, to tell us that there, nevertheless, you still have, again, this issue of past was not fully accepted, was Xeder Shein Roi Vashtibri Yisalman. That's fine, but nevertheless, though, the Mishnah is saying there's a Xeder on past, and the Gemara is clarifying that Xeder is not so absolute.
Okay, I'll send a letter to Ravina and Ravash.
Okay,
fine.
Yeah. All right, onward.
Sammy, what's the answer?
Okay, onward.
If I get an answer, I'll call you whatever hour it is at night.
Okay. The Gemara tells a case. Ivu have a manchis va'ocho pas abei metzri. Ivu, which is the name of one of the Amoraim, was biting and eating some bread of goyim by the borders of the field. Amalahu Rava v'itemer of Nachmanis. The Rava or some say of Nachmanis told the other chachamim lo tishtov ba'adei da'ivu. Don't speak with Ivu anymore. In other words, like treat him as if he's in Chayim, or a different girsa that a number of the Rishonim have over here that Garis Abbas brings is don't say, from now on, don't ever say over teaching his name.
Right.
Because he's eating goyish bread. Now, what was Ivu saying? So what was going on over here? It was in the field. However, it was bread of Balabasim, which was saying that there's less of a heter for that. Balabasim goyim, right? So even if it was out in the field, there's less of a heter for it. Because again, there's more of a heter if it was from a commercial baker, not so much from Balabasim. Another way of looking at it is even if technically it's mutter, Ivu being one of the chachamim should be more careful. People are likely to learn from him. And it's something anyway for him to be more nizer in. An interesting explanation that I saw that in a sefer of Shailos HaTshuvos on it is why is the Gemara mentioning that he's biting and eating it is because he started eating it in the field and then was walking into the city still eating. So Rava, Rav Nachman Yitzchak is saying, Mela you ate it in the field, fine, maybe you have a heter for that, but you have no heter to come into the city still eating it.
Munching on it,
yeah. All right. Fine, so that's bread.
That made it even worse.
So again, so the Mishnah is telling us that a blanket statement of bread is also what we see from the Gemara. It's not necessarily so. There are a lot of details. And the final halacha is that in many cases it's not actually usur. In many cases, when it's past palter, it is mutter, at least under some circumstances. And that's it.
So
Cheerios, I really don't know about. Toasting is not really that different than baking. Honestly, I don't know. If you want, I'll look it up afterwards. I'll look it up later and send something on there.
Yeah, you would do that. That would
okay.
be great.
All right. Fine.
You obviously don't eat Cheerios.
You eat Cheerios for Shabbos?
All right, onward.
You make Cheerios on Shabbos, and regular Cheerios are for weekdays. But we...
All right, people, come on. Yeah. Fine. Okay, Vashem and Shalahem. Then we said in the Mishnah that olive oil made by Goyim is awesome. So where does this Gzera come from? Shemen. Rav Amar Daniel Gozer Olive. Rav says that Daniel made a Gzera about it, as we'll see soon. Ushmul Amar Zlifos and Trokelem Tmeim Oysarton. Shmuel says that you have, they use kalim tmeim, kalim that are tame, and they put the oil in them, and the isser comes out of them into the oil, and that makes the oil also. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says it doesn't specifically mean the word zlifosim doesn't actually mean the plata, the actual what comes out of what exudes out of the keli. Rather, it means pouring oil into a keli has an effect of causing stuff to come out of the walls of it and get absorbed into the oil. So the oil is sharp stuff. A keli that's used by goyim and that has trephis in the walls. No, then that has trephis in the walls of it. So therefore, so that would make it awesome. Well, tmeis we're talking about, right? So the question is, what do you mean tmeim? Also, kula ama ochli taras ninu. Do most people eat taras that we should make a gzera for the whole Jewish people not to have oil because they may have put it into a keli of tmei? Ela zlifos and kelim asurin. No, we don't mean tmeim in the sense of tum of a tara. We mean kelim asurin, kelim that had iser that iser had been cooked in them or absorbed into them. Again, Rashi says lifosa means platosan, that you have what exudes out of the keli, what comes the material that was embedded in the walls of the keli that now comes out into the oil. Tosfos says it means the very pouring of the oil itself into the keli causes the stuff to come out. So it amounts to the same thing. It's a different way of understanding the word lifosa. Anyway, that's Shmuel. Okay. So Amar Shmuel Rab. So Shmuel said to Rab, Bishlema Lididi, you can understand well, according to my understanding, that I say that the reason for the Xeron oil in the first place is because of the trephus from the keli that get mixed into the oil. Well, in that case, then how do we have that it could ever be mutter? This is how it can happen. That we know that Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta came and he said, Dorosh Rab Simloi ben Nisivin, that Rab Simloi had darshan in the city of Nisivin in Babel, Shemen Rabbi Hudo beit dinin nimnu all of Yitzhu, that as far as oil, Nisivin is in northern Babel, yeah. Nowadays, I think it's in Turkey, but in the old days it was in northern Babel, yeah.
He came
from the seven. I don't know. Anyway. No, it doesn't necessarily mean he came from Eretz Yisrael. It could mean he came from the seven. I don't know. Anyway, Rabbi Simloi Darshan over there, Shemen Rabbi Hodor Beit Din and Nimnu Olav Beit Yiru, when it comes to oil, Rabbi Hodor Anasi, and his Beit Din voted on it and were master it. So therefore, so how can that be? How can it be that before it was also and now it should be mutter? Fine, because it wasn't really a gzera per se. Kosava noisen tamlas gam mutter. Because the earlier chachamim held that even an off taste that ruins the taste of whatever it's mixed into still makes it aser. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, or whatever, and his base disagreed with that. And they were in Texas. In other words, so like this, let's say this is a keli that was used for cooking today for meat or something.
Right.
Whatever comes out of the walls of the keli and gets mixed into the oil is going to damage the taste of the oil. The oil is not going to be of such good quality anymore. The earlier chachamim.
You're cooking meat.
Yeah, okay. The earlier chachamim.
You're cooking meat.
Okay, whatever. The earlier chachamim who made this zera on shemen that's listed in our Mishnah held that noisen tam lefgam is osir, Therefore, that means that even though the taste ruins the taste of the oil, it's still also, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya and his Beis Din are entitled to disagree with that because it wasn't actually a gzera per se. It was just that's their understanding of halacha, and a later Beis Din can argue in understanding of halacha with an earlier Beis Din. So Shmuel says, according to my understanding, then fine, we can understand how it is that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya and his Beis Din are able to be master and an old gzera like that. Elo the dust, I'm a Daniel gzera all, but according to you, Rav, you say that Daniel made a gzera on it. And at the time of Golas Babel, Daniel Gozov also Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya Mavatale. How could Daniel make a Zera on Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya? Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya come and be Mavatale later. But now we learn in a Mishnah in Adius, Ein based in Yochel Avatel Dere based in Chavere, one based in cannot cancel what a previous based in said, what they were Sakana or something that they made, Elim can Godo Haimene B'Chochma over Minyan, unless the second based in is greater than the first one in Chochma and in Minyan. Right. So in chokhmah, meaning in other words that the either that the av beis din is more of a chokhmah than the previous one, or that the whole beis din in aggregate is whatever. Minyan, there's a lot of different explanations of what minyan is. It can mean the number of the number of the other talmid chokhmah in the generation who were not members of the Sanhedrin but agreed with the gzera or the takana. You have other explanations that it means the number of talmidim that he had. The number of talmidim that the av beis din had. You have an explanation that it means age, and you have an explanation. Reuven Margolius suggests that maybe it means the number of the members of the beis din who voted on behalf of the takana. So if you have Reuven Margolius says this. Reuven Margolius, he was a well-known talmid chacham. He wrote a lot of sfarim on many different.
That makes a lot of sense.
So he says, for example, you know, if you have let's say one a takana with a gzeira, let's say was made by a beis din that the 60 members voted for it, so you'd have to have in the future. You want to overturn it, you have 61. To have at least 61. Well, yeah. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is not greater than Daniel B'chachmo opinion. So how would that work? And by the way, now there is a lot of discussion among the Rishonim about the exact parameters. When do we say that a later beis din can overturn what an earlier one did? When not? And when does it depend on chokhmah over minyan? So for example, one explanation is that if it was a gzeira that poshat yisurei b'chol yisrael, that something that the whole Jewish people ended up accepting this gzeira and following it, then another beis din can never cancel it, even if they're greater b'chokhmah over minyan. As opposed to, and then you also have difference in gzeiras and takonis. You have gzeiras as a siag around the Torah. You have takonis,
right.
Takonis, like to do something, like for example, to say halal or whatever, would be an example of a takana. And then you have also, and then you have, again, understandings of Torah. Like, for example, is nois and tablet gam, mutter or usser, that a later base and can argue with an earlier one.
So the main thing they cannot.
The main thing they cannot, therefore, is gzeiras and takonis. And in particular, when those were poshat yisurei b'chol yisrael, takonis, if I remember correctly, takonis never zeiros when poshat yisurei b'chol yisrael. Okay. Anyway, so the question is,
I think that poshat yisrael is takana was accepted by the whole Jewish people.
That's the point we were saying before. The very fact that we see that many people do eat pasachum shows that it wasn't accepted. That's the point. That's why we're able to make kulos in it. So
it could be a test of time, but before that...
No, but in the times of the Gemara already we see, because Rabbi Yochanan has to point out that Moichot Truva Beis Din, implying that people were eating it, and we have to figure out exactly what is Musar and what is Osir. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, so back to over here. So Shmuel is saying to Rav, if you're going to tell me Daniel made this Zera, then how could it ever be canceled? Amalei, so Rav answers, Simloi Ludor, Kamrit. You're talking about that you're saying that Simloi, Rav Simloi from Lud, is the one who came and announced that it's Musar? Shani Ludoi de Mazalzel. It's different. The people of Lud are careless with the takanas of Chacham. So therefore, I don't know. No. So he's saying, in other words, you're saying that Reb Simloi came and said it's Mutter. I don't believe Reb Simloi that it's actually Mutter. I hold that he's just being Mazalzel on the takana of the Chachamim, that really it's still Osir. As a matter of, well, in the Yerushalmi, it tells a little bit. One second. So, Omalei, so Reb Shmuel says to Rav, Eshlachlei, should I send him a message to that effect? Ichsif, and Rav was embarrassed. Now, what does that mean? One explanation is that Shmuel says to Rav, do you want me to inform Reb Simloi what you said about him? Now, how could he do that? What he means is, Reb Yaakov Emden explains, we know there's a concept that in the halachas of Lashon Hara, if it's something that you know the other person, if it's something that you wouldn't be embarrassed to tell the other person to his face, then it's not Lashon Hara. So therefore, Shmuel says to Rav, don't you realize what you just said is Lashon Hara on Reb Simloi? You would be embarrassed, and in fact he was embarrassed, to say such a thing and to his face, so therefore don't be saying such a thing.
But if it's true...
even if it's true, it's still not the still shouldn't be saying it. A different explanation anyway is a different explanation is that
rather it's true, it's still Lashon Hara.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, a different explanation is that what Shmuel means is Eshlach Lei, should I send a message to Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya that he will confirm that Rabbi Simoy didn't just say this on his own, that he's coming as a messenger of Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya to say this. And Rav was embarrassed in the sense that Rav would say, I don't agree that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya has the right to do that, as the Gemara is going to go on, which we'll learn tomorrow, Beis Hashem. However, I don't want to go up explicitly against him. He is a Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, after all. I want to have Derech Eretz for him. So therefore, he was embarrassed. And it was fine. Don't send him a message. But I fine. Maybe he said it. I still don't hold that he had the right to say it.
This is the time that Shmuel and Rav are talking is time during the Nasiya of Yehuda Nasi?
Of Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya.
Rabbi Yehuda
Nasiya, which is the grandson of Rebbe.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, the Yerushalmi.
You have to be careful.
Yeah.
Even he was ashamed.
Let it. So he said, in other words, basically, what he said basically, according to the second opinion, fine, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya was master it, fine, I accept that. I don't have to hold that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya was right in being master it, but fine, okay, I still hold that Daniel made the Gzera and Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya has no business overturning.
Do you remember that, Maestro, about the older Chacham who approached Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya and told him off?
That was a different grandson.
So that was
right. Okay. So, okay. Let me just finish up real quick over here with something that Yerushalmi tells the story also and tells it a little bit differently. That Shmuel says to Rav, when this announcement came, when Rav Simloy is going around and announcing, you should know, Rav Yehuda Nasiya and his basin were matir oil, so Shmuel says to Rav, now that the basin said it's mutter, you better eat it, and if you don't, you're going to be a zaken namer. And Rav says, yeah, but it's Rav Simloy arguing, it's Rav Simloy coming and announcing it. I know when I was still living in Eretz Yisrael that Rav Simloy is the one who was arguing all that time that the Gzeder should be overturned. So I don't think, so again, similar to our Gemara over here, I don't think Rav Simloy is necessarily, maybe he's not actually lying, but he may have misunderstood.
No.
In other words, he's saying Rav Simloy was the one who was always over the years when I was in Eretz Yisrael. He was always big on the idea we should be overturning this Gzeira. So now maybe he which I hold comes from Daniel. So therefore, maybe now he's coming now and saying Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya was master. Maybe it's a misunderstanding, like we had before with Rebbe and the bread or something. I don't necessarily have to accept that Rabbi Simloy is actually bringing us a message from Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya. Nevertheless, though, continues the Yerushalmi, that Shmuel did not accept that argument. He pressured Rav, and Rav ended up eating from the oil.
Oh, wow.
And the Rambam brings on that basis, in fact, based on that Yerushalmi, that if a person were to hold nowadays that oil of goyim is usur, it would be usur because you're going against what the basin of Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya decided. I, Daniel, made the Gzeira. Nevertheless, though, the halacha is that the Gzeira on oil is botel, and you're allowed to eat olive oil of goyim. So that's it.
He would have to prove that he's Gilgal of Daniel and Navi.
I mean, it doesn't make sense. Once
the Gzeira
of Daniel, but nevertheless, though, Rabbi Yehuda, despite Rav's misgivings, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya did have the ability to overturn the Gzeira for reasons that the Gemara is going to talk about afterwards. And therefore, that's it. The Gzeira is bottle because it wasn't poshed to Rabbi Yehuda. Because again, most of the Gzeira never accepted. So we'll deal with that tomorrow.
It was just never accepted.
So that's the thing. So therefore, so they checked. They found that it had never been fully accepted, and therefore.